So my top song is 1989, and there's no other 1989 in here. And my favourite album is Speak Now, and I only have one Speak Now song on there. So
I don't know, maybe having a little bit of an intellectual chat.
We are intellects.
Hi, I'm Erin Velak, and I've made it my mission to interview the members of the University of Nottingham's student radio station, URN. Join me to uncover how our members got into student radio, what they're listening to in their free time, and their most iconic pieces of clothing that might make you recognise them as you're walking around campus. I want to know who they are when the mics aren't live, so let's find out. This is Off Air with URN. I am here today with Abby Rose.
Hello, everyone.
Current head of welfare.
I am.
Future head of data.
I am.
You are in through and through.
Yes. Runs in my blood. I run purple.
Bleed purple.
I do.
How are you doing today?
I am all right. I'm feeling fresh. It's a bit grey today, which is a bit not as nice as it has been the last few days. But you know what? Not knowing it get me down.
Fair enough. It's been getting me down a little bit. I walked to campus and I was like, I want the sun. I'm hoping later it will clear up a bit.
I think it will.
Yes. All right. We have... Where were we? Did I say where were we? Definitely no tech issues. This feels like it's like the 50th time we're doing this, even though it's like technically the second.
Second time. Today. Third time's a charm.
Second time today. So, Abby.
Yes.
Let's start at the beginning.
Yes.
How'd you get into radio?
So I was chilling around and I got leafleted in Freshers Week. So I was just walking around. I didn't really have any intention of... I kind of wanted to join society, but didn't really have any intention of, you know, going out of my way particularly. It was just if one caught my eye. And I was just sat with my housemates at the time, who I'd just met, obviously. And we... got approached, and just there was people started chatting to us, people from URN. I took a leaflet and I didn't go to the welcome meeting. I didn't speak to anyone at the fresh fair, nothing. I just kind of came back across this leaflet like the week later and was like, oh, maybe I'll have a go at this. Sent Anna, who was our head of daytime in my first year, an email, and she was like, yeah, you just have to do a demo. So I did a demo over Zoom, which was really odd. I remember being in my bedroom just playing music to like out loud to nobody. It was great. And then Anna emailed being like, does anyone want the pre-crisis show? Snatched that up, I did, which is a very good decision on my part, I have to say. And I've been doing it ever since. And I found this leaflet recently amongst all of my things as I was packing up, but very exciting.
Did you have a lot of other leaflets?
I actually didn't. I'm pretty sure. When I moved out of my first year house, I'm pretty sure I went through and binned all of the others and consciously kept this one because I was like, this is like a piece of my history at uni. Yeah. So maybe it's just something I'll just keep with me forever, you know? Who knows?
Quite nice.
Yeah, it's quite a nice little thing to have, actually. But yeah.
It's very sweet. I never got a leaflet.
We'll find you one.
Jealous. I want one. Maybe I'll make my own. Give it to myself.
Yes, I think you should. That's a good idea. Just pictures of you, though.
Yeah. Were there any other societies that you joined or tried in first year specifically?
I actually didn't in first year. I'm pretty sure I didn't. I think I was a bit like, I don't really know what's going on. Find my footing first. I'll join one society. And then if I feel like I could do other things. I think it's one of those, you don't really know what being in a society is going to be like until you're in one. And especially because our society is quite a niche terms of participation in it. Obviously, we have to do something 2 hours every week. And all of the other stuff is kind of what goes along with it. It does take up quite a lot of time. So I was just a bit like, you know what? I'm happy in my little radio bubble. I'm already doing a joint honours degree. So I'm already split across two things there. I was like, I'll just focus on the one.
Just the one.
But this year, I am in Taylor Swift socks, so obviously.
It has to be, yeah.
But I shall be a member of these two again next year, and that'll be me sorted for my degree, which is sad.
That is sad, yeah. Were you ever tempted to go back and join one? Or have there been, like, friends that have been doing stuff that you've been, like, I don't want to join now because I'm too busy, but if I had in first year, I think I would have loved this.
I don't know, actually. I feel like maybe. None of my, like, close friends are really in societies that... I mean, they're in, like, their subject societies, but none of them are really in, like, a kind of thing you have to participate in. I think maybe if I'd gone back, I'd wanted to do like a sports team purely for fun. But then I just think the commitment of it, I just don't have time for. So I don't know, maybe in an ideal world I would have joined a sports team, but like also I'm not the least athletic person you'll ever meet. Like I'm lazy. So who knows what else could have happened. But I'm happy with the decision I made actually.
Yeah. It's crazy because I'm such a do things person.
Yeah.
That when my first year, my thought was I'm gonna join everything.
Yeah.
And I definitely have been through a few societies and just not enjoyed them.
Yeah.
Not got on with the people as much. Like, haven't found that friend group. But radio's been a constant throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And volleyball, actually.
Yeah, you've
got... Volleyball I go in and out of, depending on who's around.
Yeah, you're stuck here, though.
Depending on, yeah, you've been who's stuck the coach, here. Who's annoying.
Yeah, fair enough.
You can't get away from it in a sports team. If you're not enjoying it, you're not enjoying it. Whereas radio, I can always take a step back and it doesn't affect anything.
Exactly.
Yeah, nice one to pick. Good choice.
It was a good choice. I have to say it was a good choice.
Did you have an interest in sort of radio or something, or any sort of media coming into university, or was it not on your radar, and was it the leaflet that sparked your interest, let you know that the radio even existed?
I think I did know it existed beforehand. I definitely didn't come to uni expecting to do anything like this. I've always been told I'm a chatterbox and I've always loved music. And my mum used to say to me that I had a face for radio. She used to be like, you've got the face for radio, you should do radio, Abby. Obviously joking, but I also look exactly like my mum for context. So like,
so she can't say anything.
It's even more like, okay, whatever, mum. So I've kind of... It's never been something that I seriously considered, but it just made sense in my brain when it came up. So I definitely knew it existed before I came to uni, like having just scrolled through all of the societies and stuff. But it was on a bit of a whim that I was just like, yeah, you know what? I'd be good at this. Because it's not like I even had anyone around me at uni to be like, yeah, you would, because no one really knew each other.
Yeah.
So it was just like, yeah, you know what? I trust my gut, and my gut said, do it. So... here we are now.
I like that. Are you tempted to join any of like Impact, any NSTV, or are you a radio girly?
I do think I'm a radio girly. I despite being an English student, I can't write. I just can't do it. Like, I can write an academic essay, don't get me wrong, but I've never really been one. In primary school, I always used to get told, you should be a journalist. I wanted to be a political journalist when I was in school. God knows why.
That's but so like, cool that like, it's teachers so even telling you that.
I know. But I just kind of... I think it's one of those things that I might be kind of good at it on paper, but I don't really enjoy it that much. Sorry, Impact. But I'm just too awkward for TV, I think. Like, I'm better behind the mic. I'm not so good in front of the camera. Whenever I'm told to record something, I just find myself seizing up, which is weird because I'm not that awkward of a person.
No, you're not at all.
I'm quite I'm just not that awkward. But when it comes to that,
you're one of those people that's really easily chat, like you say, you're a bit of a chatterbox. Like,
yeah.
I feel like you can always just start a conversation and have a conversation with whoever.
Yeah.
So the fact, maybe it's the fact you're not talking to a person, you're talking to a camera,
it might
or by
be
yourself that
I just get there and I just seize up, and it's just like, and I, because I'm not like that, I think that it makes me really uncomfortable because I'm never like that until you put me in that situation. So it's
and
like,
then you go, oh, what's happened?
Exactly. So, you know.
Do you ever talk to yourself?
Yes. Oh my God, all the time. I always talk to myself. I think that's why I can do radio. Like, I did it for a year and a half on my own.
Yeah.
Just sat in the studio. I did 24 hours, a lot of which was on my own, you know? It's just me talking to myself. It's great. But yeah, if I'm in my room on my own, I talk to myself all the time.
Yeah.
Do you talk to yourself?
I do. And do I want to say this? It's going to make me sound slightly insane. I only talk to myself when I'm looking at myself in the mirror.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know if I could talk to myself when I'm looking in the mirror.
I have full-on, not like conversations with myself. It's more like I practice conversations.
Oh, okay.
So I really remember when I was doing an interview, which I think is out before this one, with Avi, who is an alumni of URN,
mm-hmm.
and was on The Apprentice.
Oh, yes.
So I interviewed him, and just as I was like thinking of questions, stuff like that, I was just... Also, my mirror faces my bed. So I just sit on my bed and look at myself in the mirror and talk to myself. Or if I know I need to like go speak to a lecturer, I am the kind of person who, when I'm in a restaurant, I've practiced what I'm saying to order, you know?
Oh, yeah, me too.
And I find that if I'm on my bed thinking about things, then I will just look in the mirror and like practice it out loud.
Yes, I get that. I do get that. I don't think that's insane.
No.
No, I get it. I understand it. I don't know if I could look at myself and talk to myself just because, I don't know, I think that would throw me off. But if I'm just lying in my bed, so at the minute, I'm obsessed with making friendship bracelets. So I sit in my bed and I'm making my friendship bracelets and I'm just talking to myself, so I'm doing it.
Can I just say, it's so on brand you're obsessed with making friendship bracelets right now because you're about to go to camp.
Yeah. So I've taught myself this skill because I'm like, so I'm going to go to camp and everyone's going to love me because I can make friendship bracelets.
What kind have you been making?
Like just little like embroidered little like they're called like chevron bracelets, and I've learned how to make a fancy loop at the top now. I made this. I've got my little hair.
I do like your hair
braid in. I'm just making all kinds of random stuff because I just got loads of thread for like a fiver off Amazon, and it's just a really fun skill.
It's one of my favorite things to do. And you know, you just put something on the TV and you just.
I just sit there and I'm like.
You have actually been tempting me to get back into it.
Yeah, do it.
Whenever I saw it on like your Be Real or whatever.
Yes.
I'm like, Abby's making bracelets. I want. My favourite one to make is, you know, the stripy one.
Yeah.
I perfected the art of the stripy one. That was all I used to do.
I'm learning how to make ones with hearts in at the minute. Like a heart as it goes down, which is quite fun. That's but I'm getting pretty good at it now, so I can do different patterns and stuff. But yeah. I'm just really trying to fine art it before I get to camp.
Oh, you're going to be everyone's best friend.
Oh, that's the goal. That's the goal. I'm like, here's a friendship bracelet. Will you be my friend?
Well, I don't know if we gave any context because I did actually really want to talk about your summer plans because I think they're so cool and interesting. You seem so passionate about it.
Ooh.
Abby is going to America to work at an American summer camp.
I am,
with a load of American kids doing American things.
Yes, like raising the flag every morning, and I'm there for 4th of July.
Have you learnt the Pledge of Allegiance?
No, I refuse. I'm literally going to get that. I'm going to find all the other Brits, and I'm going to be like, we're not pledging allegiance to this flag.
No, this is not my flag. You know what you should do? You should just sing God Save the King louder.
I've never owned a Union Jack in my life. I'm a bit weird about flags. I think, you know, there's a culture around flags in our country. It's a bit weird. I bought a Union Jack to take with me to America because I'm like, I actually am refusing to be aligned with you all. I'm taking my Union Jack to the flag raising every day. I'm going to wear it as a cape. So, yeah. I'm feeling very...
patriotic.
Yeah, never in my life have I felt patriotic until you put me in a group of Americans.
I am the same.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, England's great for things. It's not great for other things. I can use my critical thinking skills.
Yeah.
As soon as I'm with an American, we are England. The best country in the world.
Britain, England, UK, like, literally.
I think I just shouted really loud into microphones. So sorry, headphone listeners.
Hope they all enjoy that. It's just passion. We just, you know,
we're passionate.
The Yanks really bring something out of us. Yeah. So yeah, that'll be fun. But yes, I'm very excited. I'm going to New Hampshire, which is just next to New York State. So I'm flying into Boston, which I'm very excited about. I've never been to Boston, so it'll be really exciting. But yeah, I am going to be spending my summer with screaming children.
It'll be so much fun.
It will. I'm looking forward to it. And you're right, I am really passionate about it. It's, you know, I want to be a teacher. I've always worked with kids my whole life. So I'm really excited to be doing something different and hopefully make some difference to some kids' lives, and hopefully their lives will make difference to mine. I've always had kids in my life, like through all of my jobs that I've worked in, that have made huge differences to my life.
And so. You are an older sister.
I am. I'm the oldest of four as well, so very close to my siblings, and I'm very much an older sister in everything I do. Everything I do.
Older sisters are teachers. Like even without, you know, a training degree. Or whatever, you have the skill set to be a teacher. Yeah. It should just be the form is just, are you an older sibling?
Yes.
And that's it.
My dad often tells me, so my dad's the youngest of two. Apparently his older brother tells him that he worries about me because I'm just the oldest daughter to a T. He's like, just make sure you're looking after her. And I'm like, yeah, dad, make sure you're looking after me. I've got oldest daughter syndrome.
Is your mum the oldest?
No, so my mum's the oldest of two. And my dad's the youngest of two.
Okay.
My mum's, they've both got brothers. They've both got one brother. But because neither of them have sisters, they've got a very different dynamic, I think. Mm. Because I've got two sisters and a brother, I feel like I kind of have an understanding of pretty much like a lot of sibling dynamics. And my brother and sister are twins as well. So we've got twins. We've got brothers, we've got sisters. There's a big, like, there's 5 years, but that's not that big, but there's 5 years between me and my youngest siblings, which is enough to feel like a bigger age gap.
Yeah.
And also, my parents were quite young when they had me. So by the time that they got to having the twins, like, even the twins, like, parents, their friends' parents are still older than my parents.
Okay.
So, like, we've had all kinds of dynamics because there's such a range between the four of us, which is quite nice. But yeah, I mean,
you feel very experienced.
I do. They are the loves of my life and also the most annoying people I know.
Yeah, that's how siblings are.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's how they should be.
Exactly.
Do you think then this kind of older sister behaviour is not learnt from your parents, but rather just being in the role of an older sibling?
I think I'm inclined to it in my nature anyway, in my personality.
Yeah.
Like, even if I didn't have siblings, I think I'd still have that aspect to me. But I'm very protective of them. So not the twins, my other sister, she's a little bit ditzy. I love her, but she's a bit of an airhead. She's very clever, but she just has no common sense. Neither does my dad. Just completely lacks common sense. So I feel like a lot of my life I've kind of been like steering her in one direction, and she gets there. Don't get me wrong, I'm not doing anything for her, but she does crack me up. Sometimes she'll just be like, Abby, how do I do this? I've made her, so she's moving to uni next year, she's going to York, and I've made her like a recipe list, and I've been writing out all these recipes for her, because I'm just like, I feel like I need to like help you along.
You're
this
preemptively
journey.
Helping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she'll be fine. I'm just like, I do feel like her mum sometimes. I'm like, I'm so worried about you. Whereas my mum's like, she'll be fine.
Yeah.
Like, she's, my mum's
know
very...
that you're going to be fine. For some reason, yes. I feel like siblings worry that a little bit more.
Yeah.
You're like, well, I barely got through this.
Yeah.
And so you're definitely...
Yeah. And my mum is very laid back. But she's very much, to be honest, the easiest way to put it is she's very much like, I don't really care about her. And we're like, obviously she does care and she loves us, but she's very laid back. Sometimes I hear people talking about their mums and talking about how their mum's quite controlling, and I'm just like, my mum is just not like that at all. Like, sometimes I'm just like, mum, come on, care a bit, come on. Like, that's my problem. But no, she's just, I feel like I compensate for her lack of, like... her lack
You're
of worry.
A team together.
Yeah, she doesn't worry, I worry too much. So it evens out in the end.
As it should.
It
sounds
out
like you've got a nice balance going.
Yeah, we do. It all works, I think. The family dynamic is good.
I have to ask, have you already got Father's Day planned?
Well...
Because it's in 2 weeks.
I know.
Now.
So it's my first Sunday in the US. I fly out on that Tuesday, yeah, and it's my first Sunday in the US. So I've said to my dad, my present to you, is I'm not going to speak to anyone. I'm just on text. I'm not going to FaceTime or call anyone until that Sunday, and then I'll call you. You could be the first person I call when I'm in America on Father's Day. I'm sure.
That's quite sweet.
Yeah, it's quite... To be fair, like, these things are never that big of a deal in my house. We've done big 18th birthdays, but birthdays have always been a relatively chilled thing in my house. We've always been more of a Christmas than a birthdays kind of household.
We do
Father's Day and Mother's Day, just not massively.
I think a lot of British families from my kind of just
observational, yeah.
Like just what I see is a lot of people just are like, Mother's Day, bunch of flowers, maybe we'll go for brunch
and a card.
Yeah. Father's Day, have a card, and no, have a box of chocolates.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not as big a deal. I feel like we think it's become more of a bigger deal because everyone likes to post on social media.
Yes, that's
but it
true.
Tends to be like actual celebrities who a lot of the stuff they're giving is paid for.
It's gifted. Yeah.
It's brand deals and stuff like that. So it's not actually that big a deal.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I back that.
Had to ask because I'm not the oldest sibling. See, my family's got this strange dynamic of I'm not the oldest sibling, but I'm the oldest girl.
Yeah.
So I have just taken over oldest...
Yeah.
I have oldest child syndrome.
I completely understand
that.
But
I'm also a middle child, so I'm such an attention seeker.
You got the clash of like the two.
Yeah.
I love that.
And I'm not even the only middle child. And that's my... It's so funny.
I love
that. And my brother is... Love him to death. Does not care.
Useless.
It's not that he... Okay, no, that's unfair to say he doesn't care, because he does care. And he is... great. He's weirdly the best gift giver I know.
Oh, there you go.
And I never understand how he's so good at it.
Yeah.
Because you think he hasn't listened to a word you've said.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he, you know, is getting me like 3 kilogram tubs of peanut butter because he knows I love peanut butter.
Nice.
You know, he like just somehow picks up on like a little thing he knows you love and does it so well.
Yeah.
But I think I've taken on the mantle of... Now I'm at university, I've taken on the Father's Day, Mother's Day mantle, and I'm the one rallying the troops.
Eldest daughter, always. Yeah. It's always the eldest daughter that sorts
And
these
I think
things.
My siblings are like, you don't need, like, they are so capable and they will do it of their own accord anyway.
Yeah.
But I've got it in my head that if I don't do it, no one will.
No one will. Yeah, I completely get that.
And then by the time I text them, they're like, well, normally I text them sort of around this time, a couple weeks before, and go, hey, this is what I've planned to buy. This is what I've done. Send me some money if you want to join in. If not, that's fine. This is just from me.
Yeah.
And it works out. And half the time they go, oh, I've already got dad something or whatever. But yeah, no, that's why I ask, is it? But I think that's also a product of my mum is so on it with those sorts of things, because she knows it's not nice to be left out.
Yeah.
The thing about Father's Day is it's, you don't want to forget it.
Yeah.
But you don't want to over celebrate it.
Yes.
It's not the biggest deal in the world, but it's, you got to make sure that people feel nice and feel appreciated.
I get that, yeah.
So finding that balance, I think. And I think it's definitely my mum's personality is to worry about everyone else and to make sure everyone else is okay. And I feel like I am her daughter through
and
through. Like, I am the same person as her. and so I've almost got that older sister title because my mum's like that.
Yeah.
My mum's such an older sister. Although she's actually the middle child.
There you go. Maybe
she's
just
the oldest girl.
Maybe in your family it's
a thing.
Yeah.
It's just because we're the oldest girls,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rather than being the oldest child. Maybe.
I get that.
I find it such an interesting dynamic. Because to be fair, I've got a friend who she's the second of four as well. Mm-hmm. So she's just like me, but she's got an older sister. My friend is definitely acts like the oldest sister.
Yeah, wow, okay.
The oldest one is, I don't think irresponsible is a fair word to say.
Just not responsible.
She's just living her best life.
Yeah, okay, always. Fair enough.
And therefore my other, but they've got quite a big age gap. So
yeah.
I think it's like 5 years between them or something. But anyway, I digress. I love talking about siblings, as you can tell.
Me too.
Just four sibling people, just...
Ugh. It's a different kind of gravy, honestly. Yeah. Like, and people always tell me, like, you don't need to know me very long at all to know that I, one, have a lot of siblings, and two, am the oldest. Mm. Like, I think it just oozes out of every aspect of my personality at this point. Like, it just makes me who I am in so many ways. I always say to my dad, I do genuinely think the things that make me the way I am, like, that is definitely one of them. Like, one of them, there's like three or four big things that are a massive part of who I am, and that is definitely one of them.
What would you say the other bit things are?
Right, woman, obviously.
You are a woman.
I am a woman. Whatever I'm hyperfixating on at the time.
Love it.
And it's Pride Month, so you know what? My not straightness, my queerness, that's my other one. I'm going to take that. Those four things, obviously, that's not who I am as a person, but like, I think those leak into every aspect of my personality in many different ways. Have Pride Month, everyone.
Would you say they're almost your identifiers in a sense? You know, like,
I
when
suppose
you're making
so.
Your character on
The Sims,
and you pick like the four characteristics.
I think what it is, I'm going to use the Sims analogy, right? You know how the Sims has the aspiration thing, and then the aspirations kind of lead into the qualities that you have.
Yes, and sometimes the aspiration
and has the little quality. Exactly.
Yeah.
I feel like those aspects of me are more the things that lead into my personality traits, if that makes sense. So it's more that they're informing the way that I am rather than that they are the way I am.
Yeah.
So like I'm a control freak, basically. I'm a bit of a control freak. And that definitely comes from being the oldest daughter, like, definitely. So just things like that, like, they kind of seep into all of my different aspects of who I am, and I just hyperfixate on anything and everything. I'm really bad for it. Like, I know people say they're bad for it, but honestly, like, my whole life, when I was a child, the one that my flatmates make fun of me is, when I was a child, I was hyperfixated on magic. I loved Dynamo, and I would like sit and do card tricks and film myself doing card tricks. I just loved it, and I love being obsessed with something. I'm always obsessed with something.
Wow.
I love it.
What's your current one?
Well, Taylor Swift is the long-term one.
Mm.
Always
that one never goes away.
It never goes away. What am I hyperfixation on?
Have
I
you
had?
Been looking at a lot of her Eras tour stuff?
Of course I have.
I've got a friend that went last night.
Oh, I've been, every day I wake up and I refresh and I check the surprise songs, and they were good last night. So
which ones were they?
So it was Hits Different last night, which is so
good. I've been so obsessed with
good.
That song.
It's been my most listened to song for the last 2 weeks in a row. I love it. And The Moment I Knew, which is a Red bonus track. So they
the
were
bonus
great.
Songs she's been playing.
Yes, exactly. They've been, you know, slightly more. I mean, I don't think they're that niche, those two, but like,
no,
they are hidden, I suppose.
I'd say they're They're not album tracks.
No, exactly.
Well, they are album tracks, but they're not on the original album. They're on the extended versions or the deluxe version or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
She's actually...
Whatever's going on with the Midnight's versions at the minute, God knows.
I have no idea what she keeps doing. I'm so confused.
Hot Wheel. Honestly, she's... Oh,
yeah, if you don't understand, just look up Taylor Swift Midnights and see that she's got about three different versions of the album and they all have slightly different songs on them.
Yeah.
And no one knows why.
And there's none of them have all of the songs on them.
Yeah.
Like, you can't have one version of the album that has... Version. Yeah, it's odd.
So you can't just listen to the entire thing, which is so annoying.
See, I'm a bit weird like this. I listen to Taylor Swift. I have a playlist of her whole discography.
Oh, that's...
So I just take out... I just add the songs that she's been adding to the albums as we go. So, but I did take out Snow on the Beach, the original version, and replaced it with the Lana version, because I was like, I don't need two Snow on the Beaches in this playlist. Anyway, Taylor Swift talk, everyone.
Well, I mean, this is more for me than for the audience. So sorry, audience, if you are hating the Taylor Swift talk. Sorry, Dad. I always have to give him a mention.
Yeah.
I called him yesterday and we had a chat and he was annoyed. He was like, you didn't drop an episode this Wednesday. And I'm like, I'm so sorry, Dad. I've been busy. I had exams. He's like,
mm-hmm.
He's like, you ruined my walk with the dog.
Oh, bless him.
Okay, I'm so sorry.
Well, there you go. Just have a shout-out now.
I know, I have to get a podcast out. So I wanted to ask, there was a big thing going around on TikTok of rating your favourite Taylor Swift songs and comparing that to your albums. So I'm going to explain that a little bit better for listeners. So the idea is, instead of saying, oh, my favourite Taylor Swift album is Folklore.
Yeah.
What you do is you rate all the songs and find your average rating for the songs on that album. And it's like, oh, it will change which one's actually your favourite and which one's not your favourite. Did you do that?
I haven't, but I'll tell you what I have got. I'm going to check my phone. I've got my top 13 here, which I redid recently, so this is fresh.
I love this.
And I definitely think that that will help.
Yeah.
Because my favourite album, I think, only has one song in here, so where is it?
While you're finding it, I will say that me and my housemates decided to do this. And I mean, I put a presentation together.
Yes.
So the best part was... What we did was, as we went through all this, I did it by myself. And then I was like, guys, you have to do this.
Yeah.
And so then they sat down, listened to all the songs and did it and spent like 2 days doing this.
Oh my gosh.
So we did it properly.
Yeah, that is doing it properly.
And I suggested to them, cover up your like averages while you go, so you don't know what the average is until the end. And so I didn't let them look at what any of their averages were until right at the end. And I made a PowerPoint and then I like revealed it to all of them.
I love that.
I will show you it afterwards. And the best part was, one of my friends is not really a Taylor Swift fan, doesn't really listen to her. And so us other three, guessed what her album order would be.
Yeah.
And whoever got it the most correct won a Mars bar.
Oh, the ultimate prize.
We were all 1 point off from each other. The way I did the scoring, I won.
Oh, nice.
That genuinely wasn't just because I was in charge of it. The system was fair, everyone was in agreement, you know, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, we were really close, but it was a good laugh. And then we went through and did it for loads of other artists, like Harry Styles. We did all his music and all that kind of stuff. I really recommend it if you've got some friends who love Taylor Swift and you've got a day to kill.
Yes, me and my sister, that'll be our day killed. I'm sure we'll be doing that. But yes, right. I'm going to try and predict what mine will be. So my top 13 I have here, and I have, so my top song is 1989, and there's no other 1989 in here, and my favourite album is Speak Now, and I only have one Speak Now song on there. So both my top song and my top album I don't think are actually going to be my top album.
Yeah, that does suggest that maybe it might not be.
But I have two from Folklore on here, two from Midnights, two from Evermore, and two from Reputation and two from Lover. And I've got one from Red, and then one non-album track, because I'm niche like that.
Which one's that?
Crazier, which is from the Hannah Montana movie. Oh,
such a good song.
But it's I've always said I want that song to play at my wedding. It's like...
Oh, stop you giving me ideas. I mean, I'm not engaged.
Neither am I. Have to say, this is happening in nowhere in the near future.
I am on wedding TikTok, and it is...
I love wedding TikTok.
But I refuse to leave wedding TikTok.
Yeah.
I have always been on wedding TikTok just because it's so interesting.
It is.
And I've been invited to a wedding and now like the cogs are turning. I'm like, what do I wear? Well, I can't upstage the bride.
But I love those.
I've been watching all the do's and don'ts of what to wear to a wedding.
Oh, I love those.
And I've just been invited to one, so now I'm like, what do I wear? And it's in February, so I'm like, but it's a winter wedding.
Yeah, that's hard. That's a harder one. I love the ones that are like wedding dresses as Taylor Swift songs, or like wedding dresses as like characters in this film. I love
Disney
those.
Disney princesses.
Yes, I love stuff like that. So I watch those. I see if any of my favourite Taylor Swift songs are in them. I'm like, ooh. I reckon. Well, my first favourite album being Speak Now. Thing is, I think for me that album is so quality. Mm-hmm. Like that, all of the songs on that album are
quality. It's not
quality.
A very long album.
No,
as well.
It's not. And it's the same with Folklore. Like mm-hmm. Folklore for me is a very quality album. And I always say, so I'm an Evermore girly, which again I think makes sense with my personality. Kind of fits into the whole eldest daughter thing, I think. But I think Folklore is better consistently. It's a better album, but Evermore has better songs. Like, I think for me, there's more, the kind of five or six highlights for me on Evermore are reaching for me some of Taylor's highest highs. So I might argue that it could be Folklore or Evermore, because I think that they are consistently the best, which is odd because I would describe myself as a Folklore or an Evermore Swiftie.
Yeah.
Like, I think I am more of a kind of classic Taylor Swift rather than Swiftie, the like, more of like a pandemic kind of album Swiftie. And I'll tell you what, Midnights, controversially, grows on me so, so much. And again, I mean, I think it's got some meh songs on there. I think, but so the two songs in my top 13 are Karma and On Your Own, Kid, and those two for me would rank so highly that that would bring like the whole, there's again five or six songs that rank so highly it would pull that whole album up for me. But I reckon it would be probably Evermore.
Evermore was by far my lowest,
because really?
Listening back to it, I just realized it's boring in my opinion. And I think...
You just don't get it.
My friend wrote down what I said, but I basically... Because I know the lyrics of Evermore are great.
Yeah.
But she just doesn't get me with the beat and the music.
That's that. And I'm a lyrics person.
And I so love you're lyrics, probably a music you have person. To get me in with the music first. And I said something like, if you're going to be sad, keep it snappy. And my friend has like written down this quote I said. Because I was like, listen, that's fine, but you're droning on a bit. It's song after song. So that was actually one of my questions is... I am a really big Taylor Swift fan, love her. She's normally my top artist because she has so many songs.
Yeah.
Her songs are never in like my top 50, but she has so many that I listen to that she's always my top artist.
I get that.
And I tend to have very different opinions to my friends who like Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
The stuff I love, they don't like as much, and I don't like the stuff they like. For example, Evermore.
Yeah.
I find it, just personally, dull. But that's what's great about Taylor Swift, is she genuinely has a song for everyone.
Yeah.
Would you, so kind of on that vein, I was thinking about what are the Taylor Swift songs I like, and they are the Happy and Love, like Begin Again is one of my favourite songs
Begin
of
Again.
All time, mm-hmm. Paper Rings, the entire Lover album.
Yeah.
I really like the happy, poppier stuff. Would you say that, what would you kind of describe your Taylor Swift almost, what does Taylor Swift have to put into a song
for
you to like it? In general,
I'm a, with music, I am an introspective person, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say sad music, because I think that's not necessarily what it is. I think that that can be quite almost derogatory.
Is it more reflective?
Yeah, reflective. I love a track five. How many track fives? I've got quite a few track fives in my top 30. Anyone who doesn't know, a track five for Taylor Swift is her most personal kind of saddest song generally.
Normally my biggest skip.
Exactly. But like You're On Your Own, Kid's a good example, because that song is not sad. It's about coming to terms with the fact that you are always going to be the person that is there first, rather than like being lonely, which I think it kind of suggests at first. I all of the other music I listen to as well tends to be quite introspective. People would describe my music taste as probably quite depressing, to be honest. But I definitely like a lyrically complex... Basically, I like a song about anxiety. The Archer is on my list, very much.
Again,
song, and Mirable on my list. Song,
Mirable's,
you know,
all right, but...
Mirable is my second favourite Taylor Swift song, so... I also have Nothing New on there, another anxiety song. I think it's just... I suppose a coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
I find if I relate to a song, it it just makes me feel validated, I suppose. So I enjoy knowing that even Taylor Swift feels those things, you know, the untouchable Taylor Swift.
Would you say that you use music less so as a means of escapism, but more so, I guess, the way you've been describing it, as a way to almost reflect maybe yourself and have that sort of like conversation and maybe have someone else put your feelings into words?
Yes, I think so. Well, Phoebe Bridgers has this lyric where she says, I wish I wrote it, but I didn't, so I'll learn the words. Which I think is kind of sums it up quite nicely. Yeah. Like, a lot of the time you wish, you listen to a song, well, I definitely do, I listen to a song, and I find myself going, oh my God, like, I actually wish that these words had come out of my mouth, because this is, I just understand this so much. Yeah. So I think that lyric is quite a good way of encapsulating these kind of things. But yeah, I mean, not everything I listen to is like, God, depressive. I'd say, well, Crazy is not a depressing song, so there you go, guys. Crazy. Clearly I'm not also, well, Karma's in my top 13 as well, so that's a happy song. That's a very happy song.
Well,
it is.
Karma's a retribution song.
Yeah,
Karma's
exactly.
Karma's a song of justice. I don't
it's
know
not a love
happy.
Song, but it's an upbeat, poppy song, so I count it.
It's quite an angry song, but actually, no, I'd say it's the stage after anger.
Yeah, it is. It's Karma. Exactly, that's what it is.
It's literally about
it's Karma.
Yeah, but for lack of a better word.
Exactly, exactly.
Maybe she titled it correctly.
Yeah. Exactly, exactly.
We've done a long time on Taylor Swift.
We have.
And I really like talking about Taylor Swift because, as I say, so many people have such a different relationship with it.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's one of those ones that very much gets almost pushed into a box so easily. Do you find that people, as soon as they know you're a Taylor Swift fan, almost, I guess, judge your music taste? And especially being a part of radio where I'm not saying it's just After Darkers, but I am saying there is a stereotype of people who are very into music being quite snobby about music and quite, oh, you listen to Taylor Swift. Do you find that is a sort of like, I guess, stereotype that's pushed onto you, that you're just like a ditzy, happy Taylor Swift fan?
Definitely. I think even if I was a ditzy, happy Taylor Swift fan, cool. That's great.
Yeah, so what?
Yeah, so what? Like, it's my music taste.
Yeah, I wish I was in a sorority.
Like,
so
yeah, exactly. And I love all of Taylor Swift. I love the kind of fun, happy Taylor Swift that is a little bit stupid. Like, you know, Paper Rings is a great song, but it's just stupid. It's silly.
It's so silly.
And I love it. And then I love, you know, she has songs that really dig deep into parts of me that I wouldn't share with everybody else. You know, I love all of those aspects of Taylor Swift. And that is just in one artist. I think this kind of need to box people into whatever, I just don't understand it, this whole idea of enjoying something that's popular as being a negative thing. I think it's pushed onto women. I think that it is unfair. I think that it is just a means to make other people feel better about themselves because they feel cool, basically. My whole thing is, like, I do love Taylor Swift, but I love all of these other artists. I've grown up around music. My music knowledge is very good. It is. And I love music. I love the history of music. I study music. I've done modules on this. You know, I've done modules.
You do a lot. I mean, you do American studies as part of your degree.
So, like, we talk about music all the time. Music is a powerful tool. So I think just to box you in with one artist, let alone the fact that it's because she's popular, so that then therefore becomes derogatory, is just weird. So I just think it's weird.
Yeah,
like, why? So my whole thing is, I definitely have had this conversation many a time. I've also had the, oh, you're a Taylor Swift fan, you know, oh, like, that's all I can be to a lot of people. And you know what, I'm okay with that. Like, I've kind of gotten used to it.
And you know, deep down there's more to it.
Exactly. And I know deep down that there's more to her, even if it just came down to, I only listen to Taylor Swift. Like, she is a complicated, varied, with a, like, prolific artist. You know, she's got a lot of albums, all of which I connote with a very different stage of my life. You know, like, I just turned 20, and Speak Now has been a really powerful thing for me because she wrote that album as she was 19, turning 20. And
that's
that album
crazy.
Encapsulates that feeling so well.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe in 10 years I'll listen to that album really differently. And, you know, 10 years ago I listened to that album very differently, kind of being like, oh, you know, I can't wait to be like Taylor Swift. And now I'm listening to it going, oh my God, I am unsuccessful.
She's been through a lot.
Yeah, she has.
Maybe when I turn 30 I'll start loving ever more.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that is what it is.
Yeah. Do you think Taylor Swift has got a more street cred recently because of albums like Folklore and Evermore, and she's moved away I guess, from the sort of like straight pop, even though her music would be described as pop.
As pop, I think, yes, definitely. I think, so Midnights was massively critiqued, I think unnecessarily so. And the conversation that I had with a lot of people was, you are expecting Folklore and Evermore Taylor. Folklore and Evermore Taylor is not what Taylor Swift is really like. That was a product of the pandemic. That was a product of her wanting to do something different. That, I don't think we're going to get stuff like that again.
No, it was very much, I mean, you can watch all the Long Pond Session stuff about it, and it's very of the time, and
it's,
she was in a very locked in. It's why we got things like Bo Burnham's Inside.
Exactly.
It was a completely different time and place, and it was a very introspective time and place, which is why we get so many of those things. And I guess maybe that's what Evermore in particular was, just a pandemic product.
Yes.
I think Folklore felt like she was still drawing on a lot of the previous ways she'd been writing. It feels a lot more closer to, say, Reputation than a lot of the other ones. This is really just Taylor Swift. We've literally been talking about Taylor Swift for like 15-20 minutes.
I don't think people expect anything else when they see a picture of me at the podcast.
You know, like, what people don't know about me, I'm such a Swiftie.
See, I knew this. We've had this. Yeah. We've had this many a time.
And as soon as I find someone who also loves Taylor Swift, I'm like, yes, let's talk. I mean, I was on an NSTV video about Taylor Swift. And I gave my thoughts on Midnights when it, I think the day after it had been out.
Yeah.
I have so many thoughts and opinions on Taylor Swift because one of my best friends is the biggest Swiftie.
Yeah.
And I didn't know she was a Swiftie for so many years because she just never told anyone. But she was from day one sort of thing.
Yeah.
Very funny. Anyway, I think we should move on.
Let's do
it. If you want to hear more Taylor Swift chat, I know, I think it's been on hiatus for a little bit.
It has. I'm lazy.
But there is swiftly moving on Abby's Taylor Swift podcast, which I always meant to go on, but it was always on a day where I was busy. Wednesdays were not my day.
It's sad times, guys. Maybe it'll come back, who knows? But there are episodes out there of me talking about Taylor Swift, and I always talk about Taylor Swift, so just come and talk to me about Taylor Swift.
Just come find Abby. Unless you don't know her, and then don't come find Abby.
I mean, if you want to talk to me about Taylor Swift, I'm happy for you to come and find stop. I don't even care. She's the love of my life. I'll talk about her to anyone.
Fair enough. As much as I wanted to talk about Taylor a little bit just because I know she's a big part of your life.
She is, yes.
And I think it's a really interesting lens to view people through and how they think about music, respond to music, and, you know, live their life.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, we did mention a little bit that you do an American studies as a little part of your degree, and you are going to America. Do you think, this is leading on to one of my general questions I ask everybody, so I know we've already had this conversation. And the question is, I am going to ask you in a second about your mastermind or other game shows are available topic. But do you think being American culture has been a big part of your life growing up, or is it something that's more fascinated you, which is why you're now getting sort of, I guess, involved in it?
I think I'm more fascinated by it than anything. Growing up, I consumed so much media. I have always been somebody that consumes a lot of media, like TV, music, film, anything. I've always consumed a lot of it, and obviously a lot of that is American. And I really enjoy looking at the difference between American media and English media. I'm obviously also an English student, so literature really fascinates me. And again, American literature and English literature are so different. So I'm really interested in the kind of dichotomy of the two. But it's just such a fascinating place. It's like, there's no way that place is real, man. There's no way it's real. Like, how does this happen? But yeah, I don't know if you get these. I get these all the time on my feed page at the minute. This guy going to Trump rallies and just basically trying to catch people out.
Yeah.
And like what they're saying. And I love watching them, even like regardless of the politics, just watching kind of the Americanness like seeping out of these people. It's like, oh my word, you are not real. You're a caricature of
it's
a person.
Crazy to see. I think especially with the whole Trump and the polarization of politics in America recently, it's been crazy to see. And actually, you saying that, I watched a TikTok the other day, and it's so funny. This guy, and I don't mean it funny in like a derogatory way to who he's talking to.
Yeah.
It's more just, it's really interesting rather than funny. And he basically is quizzing people on, do you actually agree with what Trump is publicly saying?
I've seen
his policies. It's probably the same one you've seen. And he's asking people, like, do you support, like, gay marriage? Do you support same-sex marriage? And they're like, absolutely not. That's wrong. Like, no, not what God intended, which is not the views of this podcast. Someone put it out there before someone clips me up saying that. And then the guy who's like asking them all these questions, like, no, that's not what Trump said. You know, and he does it in a very humorous way, and he's like ticking it off the list.
Yeah,
and
I've seen this.
It's very funny, the idea of what particularly Trump as a figure stands for versus what he actually does.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I ask you about this is because I want to know what your mastermind topic is, and I want to know, is it something American media based?
It probably would. It almost definitely would be media based. Whether I don't really know. Like, I think this could go down so many avenues. Yeah. Like, how specific can I get here? Like, there's so many. I mean, the obvious one, I would do Taylor Swift specifically, like 2010 to 2014.
Okay.
I think I could do pretty well. But then I almost, so my specialty in my degree is American postmodern literature, which sounds much more interesting than it is, to be honest. It's kind of boring, but I love it. It's just chaos, absolute chaos. So yeah, I love that, and that's just that basically is maximalism to, like, oh my word, you're like, this is so intense. And I love that, it's great. So I could probably do like a postmodern author, maybe like Thomas Pynchon potentially. Or I just had a great idea and it's left my brain. Or I could do like all the American Pie films, which is what I think I'm going to do my dissertation on.
Because oh, really?
I love the American Pie films. I don't know why.
I've seen them.
Oh my word, they're awful. They are god awful. You spend the whole time going, how is this, like,
is it just
misogyny allowed on screen?
Problem after problem after
it's
problem.
It's just basically the whole things are about sex in a very American teen way. But I just think the concepts of virginity and the concepts of like a boy culture, American boy, because they are boys.
Is it kind of like frat boy culture?
Yeah, almost? Yeah. Well, but they're almost younger than that as well. So there's four films. The first two of them in high school, then there's the wedding, then there's the reunion one. So it's kind of like across their lives. Mm. And some of the characters are exactly the same. And you're like, well, okay, you should not be 40 and
what
still like this. But they're just, I love them. I think they're a great slice of American culture, to use a pie term. But I think the actors are great. I think it's funny. And I tell you what, great soundtrack, which is always good for a film, in my opinion. So.
Oh, it helps. It means you're still thinking about the film afterwards,
exactly.
Doesn't it?
And so maybe I'll go with specifically the first two American Pies, because I've seen the other two a few times, but the first two I've seen so many times. So yeah, I'll go with that. Actually, I think that'd be the one I'd be the best at.
That's quite a good one. I did realise that there are questions I ask everybody, and I do need to get through them before we finish, because... Yeah, so one of the other questions I ask everyone is iconic items of clothing.
Yes.
And I can't remember what we said last... No, we've never recorded this podcast before, and the audio didn't get messed up at all. Abby, first time I've asked you this question. What would you say is your most iconic item of clothing, or something, I don't know, or like your kind of signature style?
Yeah.
There's something I've actually thought of, which isn't technically an item of clothing, but it is something I really associate with you.
Oh, what?
Your water bottle with the stickers on.
Do you know, I was going to say my water bottle. So I actually have a new one. I don't think you've seen it. I'd have to,
no.
Like, stickered up water bottles. But yeah, my water bottle, I just have stickers on it of all my favourite things, basically. It's also
mainly
huge.
Mainly
Phoebe Bridges. And it's huge, my water bottles. I have a real thing. Again, I'm an anxiety girly. I need an emotional support water bottle. I have to have a massive one. Has to be like stainless steel, keeps my drink cold. And I will plaster it in stickers. And it gets to the point where I've had multiple people ask me if they can take photos of my water bottle. And I'm like,
that's
yeah, sure,
so cool.
Go for it. So my new one, because I had to make it family friendly, because my other one isn't family friendly, so I can't take it to camp.
I mean, if you want stickers, I've got loads of frog stickers.
Frog stickers, oh, so cute.
Harry Styles.
I tell you what, I do love a Harry Styles sticker. My new water bottle has, I've got some The Last of Us stickers on it, because I loved that show, and I've just finished playing the game. Great fun. I've got Taylor Swift, loads of Taylor Swift stickers on it, and then I got a few Boy Genius stickers on there as well.
Yeah.
But my Taylor Swift ones are so cute. I've got one that says Little Miss Swiftie, and it's like a Mr. Men character. It's so
Aww.
Cute.
I love that.
This one is family friendly, because my other one is not. I was also like, I don't want to just expose myself as soon as I meet these new people at camp. I feel like I need to like be like, I am normal. Like, but yeah, do you know what? I was going to say my water bottle, so I back that.
Yeah.
That's a good choice.
Even though it's not necessarily like like an item of clothing. It's
an accessory.
It is an accessory.
It genuinely
and
is.
You always have it on
I
you.
I do.
So I'm the same. I am an emotional support water bottle girly.
Oh, my God. Through and through.
I have a basket of water bottles under my bed.
I can't let them go. Yeah. Once I'm finished with them and I've got a new one, I can't let my old ones go.
I know. Even though it's not broken, I do move on to them.
Yeah.
Currently, this is mine. Oh. And I am showing you a plastic water
bottle. It's a Buxton water bottle.
It is. Because I lost my water bottle.
Oh, I'd be so upset.
Found it again.
Oh, thank goodness. I'd be distraught.
Yeah, I was. It was also the second time I had that water bottle because I put it in the dishwasher.
Oh.
And it shrunk.
Ooh.
And I cried.
I'd cry.
I was so fine. I got it out the dishwasher, showed it to my housemates, and they laughed because it was funny. Because it was comically small, because the top bit didn't shrink. So it's one of the ones with a straw.
Oh, yeah.
And the top bit didn't shrink, but the bottom bit did. So it was comically small. And they were like, this is hilarious. And I was like, this is funny. Then I went up to my room and cried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Private tips.
But I have it back, but I don't know why, but I think it's because this one's a bit bigger.
Yeah, it's a good size.
And also, as a environmentally conscious person, I can't buy a plastic water bottle and then not use it to death.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this one is, you know what, it's getting to its last legs. It is so bent and broken. I've been using it, I think, for a couple of weeks now, and it's...
I'm impressed.
You know, I've been getting my use out of it. Yeah. We love a water bottle.
We do.
As we should.
Oh, we do.
I'm going to ask you the next couple of questions, I think, in succession, because sometimes they lead into each other. Sometimes they're completely different. Question is, what is your proudest achievement of your life so far?
Mm-hmm.
And what are you looking forward to other than camp? Because I know that's the obvious answer.
Camp!
So I'm kind of curious if there's anything else either you've got lined up or anything you're sort of aspiring to that are in the works.
Yeah. My proudest achievement is probably, to be honest, like getting into uni. Like, I think that like A-levels genuinely probably are my biggest achievement. Like, I did do quite well in my A-levels. And
which A-levels did you do?
So I did drama, English and biology. Who do I think I am doing biology A-level?
I would have guessed that for you, though.
Really?
All my friends at school did drama, English, and biology.
Really? I was the only person in my school that had anywhere near my combination of A-level. That's weird.
To be fair, I did IB, so we had to do six subjects.
There you go.
But in terms of higher level, most of my friends did English, drama, history, biology.
Yes, that's pretty similar to me, isn't it? That is a fun combination. But yeah, probably getting here, and also like I'm really proud of just my whole family and the relationship we have with each other and the things that they do. And like my brother and my sister are in France right now and doing French exchange, and my sister particularly is really quite an anxious soul, so I'm really proud of her for getting out there. Like, I'm just proud of them for pushing themselves every day and like the people that they are and the people that they make me.
Yeah,
that's probably my two proudest achievements.
That's very sweet.
Which is very soppy of me. But I'm a soppy person, guys, so it's okay, it's okay.
It's allowed.
It is allowed. And I'm looking forward to being head of daytime next year. Really looking forward to that.
Have you got any plans in the works?
I do. I think we're going to go pretty ham on specials next year.
Nice.
I'm sure there'll be some fun plans that will be to come. But I kind of need to get through camp before all of that. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, I guess,
like,
it's one thing at a time.
Yeah.
Camp is the first one on your list.
Exactly. So yeah, there's that. And I'm also just looking forward to like what third year will bring. I'm weird and I'm looking forward to my dissertation. Like, I'm looking forward to writing about something that I'm passionate about. And
I think a lot of people look forward to the dissertation. It's just because it's worth so much in your grade.
And it's so heavy.
Yeah. And it, you know what? Having done the dissertation.
Yeah.
I saw all my friends that were doing it, who most of my friends do film and TV.
Mm-hmm.
They, as much as they hated it, they loved it. They got to talk about the things they're passionate about. One of them did it on like American Horror Story, one of them did it on Little Women.
Yeah, that's cool.
And you know, those sort of things, like media that they love and consume anyway and have things to say about. I struggled a bit more because I do not care. but at the same time, I found the more time I spent doing it, I was really interested in the topic I was doing, even though I came up with it on the spot and then just stuck with it. I was in a seminar, a tutorial even, and we were going round, and she was like, what are you doing a dissertation on? I was like, the third person. I didn't know that's what this tutorial was. I was told it was a brainstorming session. I didn't know it was, let's start with what ideas you have.
Yeah.
So, you know, panic said the first thing that came to mind, and then actually just went, you know what, if that's the first thing that came to mind, what is clearly what I care about the most.
There you go, that's interesting.
And it was really interesting and really almost rewarding to do such a big project on something I did actually care about, minus the frustrations of having to do maths, and mine was basically the way the most of the economics thingamajigs are, dissertations are.
Thingamajigs.
The way that most of the economics dissertations are, it's basically a lab report. You have to do some sort of experiment.
Yeah.
But that experiment is more, let's take data and analyse the data that's already there. So as much as I hated that process and having to explain my methods and all that stuff, the findings and the literature about it and everything like that was really interesting and was really rewarding. So although you say it's controversial, I think weirdly a lot of people look forward to it. They just get stressed that they're going to put so much effort and time into something they care about, and then it's judged, and that judgment has such a big weight of your final grade.
Which is scary.
Scary.
Yeah, no, I'm like, oh. No, but I am looking forward to it. Because the other one that I've been checking around, I was like, guys, I could literally write my dissertation on Glee. Like, I could fully write my dissertation on Glee.
You could.
I could write a good dissertation on Glee. I'm telling you that right now. That shows so much to say. But, like, yeah, I'm lucky that I'm doing an American Studies dissertation, so I'm lucky that I'm doing a degree that I could do so many things on it's such a broad thing, which will be fun. But, yeah, whole year to sort all of that out, which is scary, but we'll get there.
Exactly, and you'll be helped along the way.
Exactly.
Yeah, I do recommend people doing a degree they actually enjoy, because it makes the dissertation that bit easier.
Yeah.
I keep saying this, I didn't, you know what, I did enjoy my degree. I ended it on two modules that I think are my favourite modules I've ever taken, and one that was, half of it was all right, half of it did my head in. Half of it was on climate change, so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Your niche.
The economics of climate change. So if I do badly in that exam, embarrassing. But yeah, no, so it was good in the end.
Yeah.
Have you enjoyed your degree so far?
I love my degree.
Did just pure American studies?
No, I love my degree. I love how diverse my degree is. But also I found my niche and I stick with my niche. So I'm always doing my drama modules. I always do a drama module, and I'm always doing like American literature. I'm doing a module next year. It's called American Madness. And this is just my niche to a T. So we're doing like presentations of American madness and mental illness from like the 20th century onwards. So we're doing a whole week on the bell jar. I've read the bell jar probably 10 times in my life, never studied it. Buzzing. I love Plath.
I saw the bell jar yesterday in Waterstones and went, I probably should read that at some point.
It is a really good book. What I find so interesting about it is it hasn't aged well. There are so many bits that it's really quite racist.
Okay.
It's really quite homophobic. But I continue to read it because it still resonates with me. Like, despite all of that, it still resonates with me, and I'm so interested in female madness and this kind of idea of hysteria and the 60s second wave hysteria backlash, all of this I'm so interested in. So I'm doing a whole module on it, which is so exciting. We're doing The Yellow Wallpaper, and like Charlotte Perkins Gilman, another really controversial figure, she was very much pro-eugenics, very racist, but was like really pivotal in feminism. It's so interesting how you can be both of those things at once. So I'm really looking forward to that module. But I love English as well. Like, as much as I rave about American studies, I love it. But I do love English, and I've been an English girlie my whole life. Mm. You know, as long as I can remember, I've been praised for my English skills, and like that has been what I've loved doing. And I love reading. I've always loved reading. I got a Kindle for my 20th birthday because I was like, I don't want to take loads of books to America, so I was like, I'll get a Kindle. So I love reading. I think I've been really lucky that I kind of fell into my degree as well, because obviously it's a bit not really something
something normally people it's not a common degree to do.
It's not, and I kind of did fall into it, but I love it and I would recommend it so heavily.
I am going to ask you one more question and then we are going to end the podcast. I'm going on a holiday in a couple of weeks and I need a book to read.
Oh, lovely.
And I have not been the best. I love reading, but I read a lot when I was kind of a teenager.
Yeah.
And really have just fallen out of habit not fallen out of love, fallen out of habit.
Yeah, I get that.
So I don't read as much nowadays, but I really want to read a book while I'm on holiday. And I am getting opinions. What do you think? Something that's going to take me a week to read, because I'm only gone for a week, but I'm going to be in Italy. It's going to be nice and sunny.
Oh, lovely.
As well. Any recommendations for a nice holiday read? It's worth saying. I love a murder mystery.
Okay.
And I dabble in those romance books, but I don't like pure romance.
Okay. I was going to say, there's kind of two routes that I tend to go down reading. I will either read a classic or I will read the fluffiest romance that is literally god-awful, basically Wattpad, but I love it.
Yeah, like, I do love some of those.
Yeah. Some of them are awful.
Yeah.
I'm reading one at the minute and it's actually just bad, but I'm pushing through it. This is a hard question, actually.
Well, actually, I mean, I've not really read any of the classics. Are there any of them that you think are must reads that I should get around to? I do quite like George Orwell.
Okay.
But I have read a few of his things and I do quite like them. Because I was like, I have to read 1984.
Taylor Swift coming back 1984, yeah.
I can't. I always call it 1989 just because it's such a habit. 1984, I have read the book, I promise.
I love 1984, yeah.
Just because I was like, okay, one of those books, I was like, I have to read.
I've got a random one, which is one of those things where I'm like, I love this book, it's one of my favourite books. But I don't know. I never know how other people are going to take it. It's called White Noise. It's by Don DeLillo. It's been made into a film recently on Netflix. It's got Adam Driver in it. It's a dystopia. It's postmodern, American postmodernism.
I'm quite good with dystopias. I mean, when I was younger, it was all Percy Jackson, Hunger Games, Twilight.
Oh, yeah, me too. It's a bit weird. It's very weird. It's basically about this guy who's really scared of death. And he's living in America. A lot of it's about consumerism. All of this good stuff. And it's one of those books that you're supposed to feel confused reading it. So you read it and you're a bit like, okay. And you just push through it. And then at the end, it makes you think. It's. I really enjoyed it. I did it in first year. I studied it. I wrote an essay on it. But it's not inaccessible. It's quite an interesting story. If you like a dystopia, you're like that. It's the same way. Like 1984 is a bit confusing. It's a bit like, you know, that's kind of the point of a dystopia in some ways.
Yeah. I mean, I remember in English class, I might cut this bit out, but I don't know yet, but I will say it anyway. I remember in English class, we read Ocean at the End of the Lane.
Yes.
I don't know if you've read it.
Yes, yeah.
I loved that so much. I ended up doing the way our English classes worked, but you know, slightly different to the A-level ones, but you had to do a presentation on like three or four of the set books we did. And I did it on that one, and Siddhartha was another one we did. And I loved my presentation so much. It was a comparison of the symbolism of water in both of them.
Oh, that's interesting.
I loved that presentation and I got a good grade on it. But you know when you like put your all into it, and because you're like, I did this because I had ideas, not because I had to force myself to do it.
Yeah.
So that book, for some reason, really resonated with me. I really enjoyed it. I guess it was a bit childlike, but I found that so interesting to read about. But then there was another one we read, which was by Kundera, The Lightness of Being, or whatever it was called.
Never heard of it.
Which was confusing, but in a bad way.
Yeah.
That one I hated. That one I was like, what is going on here? So I like a little bit of confusion in the sort of like magical elements of not quite sure what happened. And I have read a bit of, he's a Japanese author, Murakami.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I don't know if...
I've never read, but I'd know
I do recommend,
about,
and
yeah.
He's got a little bit of that. It's not quite always explained. Maybe it's a little bit magic.
Yeah.
But also maybe it's not. So if that seems like what you're sort of describing with the dystopia, a little bit of confusion.
Yeah, it's just a bit weird.
I like a little bit weird.
But the other, I mean, the classic of all classics for me is, I mean, I'm an American literature student. It's Great Gatsby and Catcher in the Rye. They're the two classics. And
I'm not a fan of Catcher in the Rye.
I love the Catcher. Catcher in the Rye is controversial. It's a controversial one. I love that book, but to study, not to read.
Yeah, I didn't mind studying it because we did that when I was in first year of GCSE.
Wow, so that's quite young to be like getting into Catcher in the Rye.
To you.
I don't think it should be relatable to, like, 16-year-olds. He's unbearable. Holden Caulfield is unbearable.
I think it was the first one we did, so I think I was 14 at the time.
Wow.
And I was just like, he is irritating. He sounds like the kind of kid in class who I wish would leave.
Yeah.
So I had I had no sympathy for him at any point in the story. So I think I just found it dull because I hated him. And Gatsby, I was the one class that didn't read Gatsby.
Gatsby is a classic for a reason. I find Gatsby interesting because I've done quite a lot of study into Fitzgerald, and he's a very interesting man because he, the theory is he didn't write a lot of his work, his wife did, who was institutionalised and was killed in the fire that burned down the institution that she was put into. Oh, people were just like, she's crazy. So that if you read The Great Gatsby with that in mind, it becomes really interesting. And my A-level coursework was on his last book, which he didn't finish before he died. So it doesn't have an ending. You only have the plan of what his ending was. And it's a really interesting kind of Hollywood book that you just read and you go, you were a weird man. Like, he was a weird man. So, like, I think Fitzgerald, you need to read with the context in mind.
Plus, of who he is.
Yeah. Plus, it infiltrates every single thing in pop culture, always.
Yeah.
Like, Gatsby is in everything. You listen to a Taylor Swift, like, sometimes I listen to Taylor Swift and I go, that's Gatsby. Like, even Taylor takes, like, she has literally taken lines from Gatsby.
That's really interesting.
It's really cool.
Do you think that, I mean, this is such a completely, as I say, this might be cut out, no promises. Maybe I'll cut out Taylor Swift talk for Gatsby talk. Do you think that it's important to have the context of the author when you're reading a book?
Yes, massively. I think that changes how you read everything. I think that you can enjoy a novel that is old and outdated and whatever with context in a way that you can't without it. But even things like, I mean, the classic one with context that changes everything is The Handmaid's Tale. Margaret Atwood always says she'd never wrote about something that wasn't happening in the world or hadn't happened in the world somewhere. And that changes how you view that entire book, because that book is terrifying.
Yeah, I haven't read it myself I'm scared of being scared. I think that's the best way to put my attitudes towards things like that. I don't do gruesome stuff at all. It just doesn't sit well with me, never has. And so I've stayed away from it, but I know of it and I know about it and my mum's read it, and I know it's quite dark.
It is. It makes you feel weird because, well, as dystopias often do, I did it at A-level, and some of it's so familiar, scarily familiar. Mm. And some of it you're like, oh, there's no way this could ever happen. But the fact of the matter is, it has happened or it is happening. So yeah, context massively changes. You know, get into my little, just like I'm writing an essay. You're making me write an essay now. My degree. It's hugely important, I think, to have an appreciation for not just the author's contexts, but the contexts of the world that this book was written into and the canon. Mm. The literary canon is hugely important. You know, it changes, and as it should, it changes and it develops and it evolves daily. You know, I always think, so Jane Eyre has a sequel, not written by the same author, written by a different author. It's called The Wide Sargasso Sea, which is about, I don't know if you're familiar with Jane Eyre, but basically in Jane Eyre there's a character, the woman in the attic, for anyone who doesn't know. And The Wide Sargasso Sea is about this woman and about her story. She's a woman of colour. So it's completely changing changing the canon of that story, you know, going back and rewriting this canon. And it's just, that's a classic example of this ever-evolving culture.
Yeah.
Which is just, that's what fascinates me about English, rather than, you know, I love Jane Eyre, I really do, but I don't read that and fall in love with literature. I read that, I read the context, I read all of the other books, I read all about, you know, the Bronte sisters, and then I fall in love with Jane Eyre.
That's fair. Sometimes I know people say that like studying a book ruins it, but
nah, enhances it for me. It massively enhances. Some of my favorite books I've ever read are the books that I've studied in depth.
Yeah, because you get to know and love the characters.
Yeah,
or hate the characters, but appreciate why you hate them
and love that the author has made you hate them.
Yeah,
because that's so clever.
It's so interesting. Ugh, you're making me think about English class now. You know what? I was never going to do an English degree because I've always felt like I don't know enough. However, I've always loved English. I just am the kind of person who you need to tell me what to read
because
I need to be guided on that path rather than...
Just steer you in the right direction. Yeah.
Because I haven't read any, like, not proper, like, classics. I mean, I've read maybe one or two.
Yeah.
But I've always loved what we've done in English class, and I've always, I don't know if I'm naturally good at it. It's more I care a lot, so I put a lot of effort into it.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always tried hard and got good grades in English because I've tried hard. But I was never the person at school who was like the English kid.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know, always really interesting. I have such imposter syndrome with English, which is bizarre because, you know, most people are like, oh, I've got imposter syndrome with, like, you know, music taste and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like, oh, I'm just pretending to like this. I'm like, yeah, I love books. I love books.
I'm like that though, love too. It, but I completely like that.
I don't really read much these days.
I love a short story. Like that, I love a short story. I sit and
I'm starting to appreciate them.
I love a short story. So I honestly, like, a lot of the time, and then I'm like, what, you're not reading properly, Abby? And I'm like, yes, I am.
Yeah.
Just because I'm, or like, I do like poetry. Like, but honestly, I'm a short story girl through and through. I love a condensed, one of my essays I wrote in my only English module last term, the essay I wrote was about a film and a short story. It's like I'm not even writing about full-length novels and I'm giving myself imposter syndrome because I'm not writing about classics, because I'm not writing about literature that's 200 years old. Mm. It's an interesting subject. Again, I think there is a stereotype of an English student that I don't necessarily fit, and sometimes I struggle with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the lad.
Which is why I was never going to do English, because it's like...
Fair enough.
I can't on my personal statement say I've read all these books. I haven't read any of these books.
We all lie. But... Let's be honest. We all lie about what we've read in our personal... I lied. You defo stretched the truth. To be fair, I actually don't know if I lied outright, but like...
I purposefully put some misleading wording.
That's the beauty of a personal statement.
My favourite being... to be fair, I did talk about a book I'd read and I'd only read half of it, but I thought that was fair enough.
Yeah.
It was about the collapse of... communism in China and when they started to introduce markets.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually quite a dense book, considering I was,
I can imagine,
not that big an economics student at the time. I just did, like, you know, sort of like to A level.
Yeah.
Put that on the personal statement, like, yeah, we're doing something in history, so I decided to read a book about it. And then there was also, I participated in one maths competition
and that one in the personal statement.
Yeah, so we did the UKMT that I think most schools
yeah,
do.
Yeah, yeah.
For some reason, my school did it as well. So, you know, all the certificates I got from that, I say all of them, I always got, like, the lowest yeah. thing to get, like, the lowest participation award
yeah.
kind of thing. I was not very good at it. And that gave me a complex, because I was in the class where everyone was getting golds and silvers, and I was there like, I got a participation award.
Yeah.
But there. I did, in 2012... The international maths competition thing they did with all the international schools
yeah.
was at my school.
That's cool.
So they were kind of recruiting people for it because we could enter more teams because it was at our school.
Yeah.
I was in year 7 at the time and they were like, hey, Aaron, listen, join maths club. And I was like, fine, I'll do this competition for you. And there is a picture of me still up in the maths corridor to this day. I go and check, it's still there, and it is. And I was wearing bright red leggings with the...
classic
blue, with like this, like, not aqua, like a dark blue
yeah.
but not a navy
yeah
but like sort of like an electric blue
nice okay
top
yeah.
on it does not work,
but it's giving red, white,
I'm
and
now
blue.
Immortalized in that yeah. corridor. Yeah, so I participated in one competition. I think my personal statement started off as competing in my first maths competition in 2012.
First and only. Like that.
Yeah. Don't have to mention the and only. It was technically is my first. Maybe I'll do more.
Yeah, it's true.
And technically the UKMT is a maths competition, but...
I love it.
I love the English language.
Yeah, me too.
So vague. You know what? I did my Trent personal statement and I don't think I lied on there or over-exaggerated
anything. I'm impressed. You got a lot behind you now.
Did I? I'm trying to remember. I'm quite good at being misleading.
Don't bait yourself out yet.
No, yeah, I haven't gone yet. Not fully. I haven't started.
Don't bait yourself
I
out
don't
yet.
Think, I, you know what? I genuinely don't think I did. I don't even think I wrote a word misleading.
Fair enough.
I think I would remember it.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Because like I remember that, and I wrote like my personal statement what in 2019. Long time ago.
That's a long time ago. Time flies.
Such a long time ago. Anyway, thank you for having a chat with me, Abby.
I've loved every second.
I have loved kind of, I don't know, maybe having a little bit of an intellectual chat.
We are intellects.
Yeah, I do love talking about media and all that comes with it. Mm-hmm. It is such a big interest of mine, which is, I think, why I love radio.
Yeah.
And why I've realised that it is a career path.
Yeah.
Because even though everyone's always been like, yeah, my mum's always been like, you can do whatever you like, as long as you're happy, as long as you're trying hard, you know, do what you like, I'm going to support you through it. And my dad as well, but my mum's been very vocal about, you know, you don't have to go to university, you can do whatever works for you, because she's a teacher, so she sees a lot of kids going to university when it probably isn't the right choice for them.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of schools really push going to uni because it makes them look good.
They do,
it
yeah.
makes them feel yeah. good. So my mum's very vocal about that's not the
do
only
what's
path.
Right. Yeah. yeah.
But I think just always I've had this idea of you gotta do something serious.
I get that.
And I have loved economics. It's such an interesting topic, but
this is your passion.
I don't know that it's, yeah, it's not a passion, it's a real interest. And the stuff I like about it is the human stuff, the human stories behind it. And when we get into that, I hate the maths. I
yeah,
find it boring.
That's such a big
I don't
part.
Care. Thank you, Abby.
I've so loved it so much.
Maybe you'll be back in future.
I'd love to be.
I don't know how. I'm stopping this podcast soon, but...
You've done your bit.
Anywho's.
And if you've enjoyed listening to my voice, make sure you check out our Instagram, Off Air on Your End, to stay up to date with all the episodes coming out soon.